Back in anger, 12:30. Good afternoon. Now, 2023, which is only a few weeks away now, isn't it, marks the 125th anniversary of an institution based here in Liverpool, but it has a worldwide reputation. When the Liverpool School of Tropical Medicine was founded by Sir Alfred Jones, this was in 1898, it was the first of its kind anywhere in the world. Now, for the past 125 years, it's been right at the forefront of cutting-edge research and teaching as well in the field of tropical medicine. Now, to mark this really important and incredible, to be fair, anniversary, this week we've been talking to different people from the Liverpool School of Tropical Medicine. And one of those is Professor Dame Tina Lavender. She's head of the Centre for Maternal, Newborn and Child Health. She's a trained midwife as well. Now, earlier this week, I spoke to Professor Lavender, and she told me about her Merseyside roots and how she got the job, how she came to work at the School of Tropical Medicine.
Well, I was born in Liverpool. I grew up in Heighton, went to school in Robey Comprehensive, and then went on to do my nursing at Broad Green Hospital. I then trained as a midwife at Oxford Street and Mill Road, and worked at the Women's Hospital for many years before doing a PhD. And I did that at John Moores University. So you can see Liverpool all the way through.
All the way through. And you know what? When you mention Mill Road and Oxford, you know, maternity, there'll be a load of listeners now go, oh, I was born there. It has that effect, really, doesn't it, when you mention these names that are no longer there anymore.
Oh yeah, they were great hospitals. Yeah, I loved every minute of working there. I then went on to work at Liverpool University as my first academic post before going to UCLan Manchester and then back home to Liverpool, which is where I am now.
So where did you find all of the time to be able to do all this? I mean, that sounds like you've squeezed in so much into where you are now.
Maybe I'm just getting old.
I love the sigh. It was like that sigh was almost like, oh, where do we start with this? But it sounds as though, I mean, you sound very fulfilled with this, but I also get the indication that you've still got a lot to do, or you feel as though you've still got a lot to do.
Yeah, definitely. There's always something to do in terms of, you know, advancing practice, and most of the work I do is related to maternal and newborn health research. And, you know, we're constantly trying to strive to make things better for women and families. And I do some research both in Liverpool, but also globally as well, in various countries in sub-Saharan Africa and India and Pakistan as well.
So you're also a visiting professor at the University of Nairobi, I think. When you visit these countries in different parts of the world, was it a real gear change for you to do this? Because, you know, we're used to the facilities that we have here. We're used to the health service. We're just used to it, really. So when you go to different places, was it a bit of a culture shock for you?
Yeah, well, it's quite interesting how it all started. I was working at Liverpool Women's Hospital as a midwife, and I was asked whether I would speak to a midwife who was visiting LSTM, actually, as part of a training course. So I spoke to this midwife, Rose Malai, who I'm still in touch with now, and this was over 20 years ago. And she asked whether I would visit her hometown, which was Tanzania. And I did, and I gave a talk on evidence-based practice, and that was when it really raised my awareness of the challenges, you know, in different countries. I mean, everybody has the challenges, but in Tanzania, you know, where the neonatal mortality rates were so much higher than what we have here. But that was really the start of my work in global health, because from that point onwards, I collaborated with some of the truly inspirational midwives in Tanzania to conduct research and education to make improvements in care, and hopefully to, you know, reduce some of the poorer outcomes.
It's life-changing for many people, this. Of course it is, you know, bringing a new life into the world. And I know you've done this and everything that you've done in your career, but from the outside, listening to what you've said and, you know, other people who are not involved in what you do, you know, some people are, kind of agog at what you've done and in awe as well. Do you feel that sometimes? Do you sometimes think, have I really crammed all that in? Is that really me who's done all that?
Well, I truly have the imposter syndrome. You know, in your introduction, you mentioned the fact that I'm a dame as well. And when I got the letter informing me that I was being given that honour, I thought it must have been some kind of joke, to be honest, because I was thinking, me, a dame, you know. So yeah, and I think, is that really me? Have I done that? And I think a lot of people feel like that. I fell into the global health arena, serendipitously, really. But I think I've had the best career in the world.
And not only that, it's interesting you talk about imposter syndrome as well. You know, dames can come from Heighton, you know. There's not a law against dames coming from Heighton. But this is an achievement as well. I think it was 2016, wasn't it? You were named as one of the BBC's 100 most inspirational women, not round here, but in the world. I mean, that's some accolade. And you mentioned about getting the letter about being a dame and thinking somebody's winding me up with this. But how did you find out you were on the list? You know, one of the most 100 inspirational women in the world. Now, that's something.
Yeah, I mean, that came as a bit of a shock as well. We were creating some educational board games for midwives. And the BBC World Series got interested in this, and they featured it in their shows. That was the catalyst to then discussing, some of the work that I was doing. And then the next thing I knew, I'd been named as one of the most inspirational women in 2016. But what was interesting was that there was a midwife from Norway who was also named during that year, 2016, and now she's currently a PhD student of mine at the Liverpool School of Tropical Medicine.
Wow, it was meant to be then, wasn't it? Meant to be.
Yeah, it's amazing how things connect.
And of course, this important anniversary that's coming up. We're towards the end of 2022 now, but next year's a massive year for the school. But it must be a real special time to be part of the Liverpool School of Tropical Medicine. I remember passing it on the bus when I used to come into work when I was a teenager and seeing, you know, those gold letters across the old building there, Liverpool School of Tropical Medicine, and thinking, oh, I wonder what goes on in there. You know, it was always kind of mysterious. But now being part of that must feel good.
Oh, yeah, it is really special time for LSTM. And I think it's a great opportunity to raise awareness of all the fantastic work that's carried out here. Even though I've only been employed here for just over 2 years, I have collaborated with the school for many years. And as you say, growing up in Liverpool, you know, I think, you know, Liverpool as a city has always been proud to have LSTM. Everybody knows LSTM and knows something about it. I know that when I told my dad that I was going to move to LSTM and to be employed here, you know, he was very proud of the fact that although he said, you know, it's tropical medicine and you don't do tropical medicine. And I think that the anniversary allows us to tell people, you know, everything that goes on here. And it's not just about malaria and snake bites. There's a whole host of things that LSTM do, you know, in terms of, you know, health system work, capacity strengthening. And for me, obviously, maternal and newborn health. Mm. So I think it's a brilliant celebration.
I'm glad you said that, actually, because when the pandemic kicked in, we regularly had colleagues of yours on the programs explaining, you know, what was going on, what we're doing, the vaccine rollout and all of that, but explaining it in a really easy way to understand. And I think, as you rightly said, you know, we're very proud of the school, but not many people kind of knew what went on. It was snake bites and malaria, but it was a hell of a lot more. And I think people in the city now have a bit more of a handle on what you do. Maybe one of the positive things that came out of the pandemic, you know, and the massive role that the school played in it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I agree. I think that, you know, LSTM, like many institutions in the UK, contributed a huge amount during the pandemic. And, you know, it's great that we're able to celebrate, you know, some of that work that's been carried out. You know, it's been phenomenal.
Well, Tina, it's lovely to talk to you. And I know you said to me before our interview it was okay to call you Tina, but I always like to check with the dames. You know, you're too careful. You know, some people say, oh, no, I want you to call me Dame, but it's Tina from Heighton, isn't it? Really, that's the way.
That's right. Yeah, definitely.
And just one final point before I let you go. You mentioned your dad there before. What about the family, the wider family? What do they think about what you do?
Yeah, I think the family are proud. But in actual fact, my daughter also did work at LSTM for a few years, even before I did, as a research assistant. So maybe keeping it in the family a little bit.
Definitely. Real pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much for giving us your time as well. And don't suffer this imposter syndrome. You are where you are because you put the shift in, you put a lot of hard work in, and that doesn't go unnoticed. But thank you so much for talking to us. Take care.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye. Tony.